How aware are you?
You're probably aware that mammograms are a great way to detect breast cancer.
And that regular, moderate walking can be good for heart health.
But are you aware that the fifth most common cancer in the United States is uterine cancer?
And that the average age at diagnosis is 60?
Well, I definitely wasn't when I was diagnosed with endometrial cancer at the age of 32.
And that's exactly what inspired this podcast.
We are Mary and Alex, a mother-daughter duo engaged in multi-generational dialogue surrounding subjects related to gynecologic cancer, women's healthcare, and various other topics that impact our daily lives.
We are
Down There
Aware. Welcome back to another episode of Down There Aware. I don't know about you, but these last couple of years have kind of had us secluded in our own space, it seems, and focusing on one thing, which was that dreaded COVID. And I got to looking at some articles today, and I saw so much happened during those 2 years that I was unaware of. So I thought it might be a good idea for us to talk a little bit about all of the mainly medical advances that took place over the last 2 years. That kind of helps us get past the depressing subject of COVID and be hopeful about some great things happening.
In the news.
One of the things I was able to read a little bit about and really interested in, because I actually had a little experience with it, is telehealth or telemedicine. It really has taken off over the last 2 years out of the need, because we weren't able to go into doctor's offices and hospitals for a long time. And the medical community stepped up and said, you know, let's try this. I didn't really realize that I just kind of use telehealth and telemedicine as interchangeable words. But from what I'm reading, telehealth is remote non-clinical services, and telemedicine refers specifically to remote clinical services.
I thought those terms were interchangeable somewhat.
I thought so too. And I did have some telemedicine appointments during COVID, which, you know, I was happy to at least see my doctor face to face over the screen and talk about my health. But there really just is nothing like a doctor being right in front of you, putting their hands on you, listening to your heart, you know, looking you in the eye to ask questions. And so I don't like it as a substitute, but I think the need was there, and it was good to at least have that when we needed it.
Yeah, well, and I think back to in March when I was going through all of the emergency medicine stuff. I even recall when I went to our local orthopedic clinic as a walk-in. It's kind of not an emergency room, but a
urgent care.
Urgent care. Mm. Couldn't think of that term. And the PA who saw me stood at the end of the hallway. He walked ahead of me. I was walking very slowly, obviously, because I had this weird limp. And he stopped at the end of the hallway, turned around and watched me walk to him. And so even before I got in the room, he had eyes on me, was watching it. So I think, you know, like Mom said, it's not a replacement. I do think that it can really help, and particularly with things like therapy. Mm. And, you know, seeing a psychologist or a psychiatrist, a lot of people, that breaks the barrier, because it can be hard to go into an office and kind of be intimidating. But if you're texting or on video chat or on a phone call, it kind of, you know, you're in your own space, you're a little more comfortable, you might be more likely to do it.
Well, and you know, like so many things, good can come out of bad. And the last 2 years, we've learned so much about COVID. And because we had to have telehealth and telemedicine appointments, that industry, as I'm reading it, is projected to grow, now get this, from $68.36 billion, with a B, $68.36, to $218.49 billion by the year 2026.
Is that people paying their co-pays? Is that what insurance companies are paying to the doctors? Is that, I mean, like, I'd be interested to know what the breakdown is of, like, what those dollars actually are.
Yeah, I don't know, because the article doesn't go into that. I also wonder if it isn't money that's poured into the technology and training for telehealth and telemedicine.
I'm sure, because I mean, I know even in my non-medical job, when we, you know, had to go online and everything had to change and shift, we were fortunate that the university I work for already had a contract with Zoom. Nobody knew it because we never needed it. So that wasn't an issue. We all just kind of transitioned into that, but we didn't have to buy anything. But my job was in recruitment and getting students jobs. And so we had recruitment fairs, and I had to, I mean, I spent weeks vetting various virtual recruitment fair companies and virtual career fair companies, and they are expensive. Mm. So I imagine that, you know, it has to do with a lot of the technology costs, software costs. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but you have to think hardware. Do all doctors' offices have computers and phones and tablets that can accommodate telemedicine and have enough of them so that all of their doctors and, you know, nurse? Because I even had an appointment where one of my Mayo appointments, I had a telehealth with a nurse before seeing the doctor in person.
Wow.
So it was, you know, just the typical what you would do with a nurse in the beginning, your medications, you know, they ask you about drugs and alcohol and all that kind of basic screening stuff. But they did it ahead of time, which was nice because my time in the clinic was just that. It wasn't all of the prep and the paperwork and stuff. I mean, it's a growing business. Healthcare is not ever going to go away.
Yeah. There are always going to be sick people and people who need medical treatment and advice. But to triple in what, 4 more years? Well, it would have been a total of 6 years if we look back to 2020. For it to triple is amazing.
Well, and I think what COVID did was it put us between a rock and a hard place where we had to adapt, adapt or die, really, in different industries. And we have seen a lot of industries die as a result. But I think it also showed us, oh, wait, we can do this.
We can do it. Yep.
It's the same thing like working remotely. You know, previous to this, my job was very strict on, not my job in particular, but the overall like university policy was very strict on teleworking. You didn't do it. You know, those of us who traveled, we were forced to kind of telework on the days we were traveling. But for the most part, it was, if you're working, you're in the office. But after 2 years of being forced to be out of the office, and the university didn't burn to the ground, didn't fall apart, it still ran. Our HR and our policymakers were in a really tough position where they couldn't say absolutely no anymore. And so I think that's where doctors' offices are, who maybe were hesitant to transition and, oh, that's not for me. It's too, you know, it's too newfangled and I'm old school and whatever. Then they were forced to. And now they're like, okay, well, there's no going back now.
Yeah, I see a lot of good that came out of it. So it's a good thing to focus on that, because there's sure a lot of bad things that are associated with COVID.
For sure.
In the news.
Another interesting factoid that happened during COVID times was the FDA approved a portable rolling MRI machine.
Wow.
If you've ever had an MRI, it takes up a room. And literally, when I was doing a bunch of research about MRI machines to see what my defibrillator could or could not be in, I came up with all kinds of information, and literally you can go on a website and find the dimensions of the room you need in the building for an MRI machine because they're so massive.
But remember when computers first came out, they were an entire room. And yeah. Now you hold your phone, which is a computer, in the palm of your hand.
And not to mention the phone you have in your hand, the phone you might even be listening to this podcast on, is more powerful than the computer that landed a lunar lander on Mars.
Wow. Well, and that's what happens with technology.
Not Mars, the moon. Wow. Get my space facts wrong. I was trying to be all fancy and dramatic, and then I go and mess it up. But yeah, the lunar lander landed on the moon, and you could do that with your iPhone.
Well, and it makes sense that they've developed, and maybe because they had so much time on their hands during COVID, but they have developed one that rolls up to your bedside in the hospital. I love it.
Yeah. And this is revolutionizing, if that's a word.
That's a word.
Revolutionizing stroke patients and stroke treatment. Because as we know, I don't know if it's an hour or 24 hours or what, but like the sooner you can get in after having a stroke, the better your chances are of finding out what's wrong. And a lot of times
fixing it
to prevent permanent damage. It used to be a stroke was like a death sentence or, you know, you would be crippled for the rest of your life or have some sort of, issue. But now if you can get into a stroke center and get the right imaging and get that done and get that treated, boom, it's, you know, really easy to fix a lot of the times. And so this machine, it's called the Swoop MRI.
It swoops in.
And it was created with input from Yale Medicine. And it just received, in August of 2020, received approval from the FDA. And it's already in some hospitals in the U.S. And it looks like a little robot. And it's just this thing that rolls up and, you know, boom, 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 does your MRI, and you don't have to move the patient. You don't have to wait for, you know, the machine to be available. It's just right where you need it.
Well, good on you for doing that during COVID. Whoever did that and got it together, we need a little applause sound.
For real. And it's interesting, if you're curious about the size, it's about the size of, or it's smaller than a refrigerator. And it eliminates the needs to move frail patients down hospital hallways, which is really interesting. And here's a big kicker. So one of the awesome things about it is what it costs. How much do you think an MRI machine costs? A big one.
I don't have a clue. I can't even in the far stretches of my mind imagine.
So a bigger machine without thinking about the room you have to put it in, the cooling costs, all of
just
that.
The machine
just
itself.
The machine itself is $1 million. $1 million. Swoop, $100,000.
Wow.
That's it.
Wow.
You get 10 swoops. For the cost of one large MRI. So
that's a great advancement over COVID time.
It really is. So kudos to everybody at Yale over in Connecticut who put this together and you know, had the idea. I've had several MRIs. I've had several CT scans and never once in my life did I think they should make this portable.
No. But the people working with them every day and working without them and seeing the need... You know?
Yeah, exactly. So kudos to you, Swoop.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
In the news.
Yet another advancement in medicine that happened while we were all tucked away trying to stay safe from COVID. In San Diego, a UC researcher was part of an international team that developed a blood test that can detect whether an individual has one of five common cancers. And that detection can take place 4 years before the condition can be diagnosed with current methods. The test can detect stomach, esophageal, colorectal, lung and liver cancer with a blood test. It can even diagnose cancer among patients who are asymptomatic. They say the ultimate goal is to have these kinds of blood tests performed at regular routine checkups.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Is this going to become, you get your, what is it, HBC panel, you get your
CBC panel,
you get your glucose panel, you know, all the normal stuff they test for, cholesterol, calcium, all that good stuff. And then, by the way, we're going to screen for these common cancers as well.
I mean, just think, if it can detect as far ahead as 4 years before what our tests are showing us now, and you know so many cancers, probably all cancers, earlier detection, the better.
Well, I was just going to say, I think no cancer escapes the, you know, concept that early detection can make or break it.
Yeah.
Survival rates.
So a simple blood test. I mean, that just is mind-boggling to me. And what a great advancement.
Well, it's inexpensive. It's non-invasive. It's easily performed. It's something that, you know, people... Now, some people are afraid of getting blood tests, but that's better than exploratory surgery or a CT scan or an MRI. And it's so much more affordable.
Yeah.
So it can really, you know, and just imagine if, I don't know if they have treatments to treat people that early or if it's just a surveillance at that point to see when it, you know, gets to a point where it can be treated. But wow.
Yeah. Knowledge is power. We say that all the time. You know, knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe,
the American hero.
Sadie just came up and licked my armpit.
She likes when we sing.
She does. But yeah, I mean, just imagine. I mean, I can imagine one day where every cancer will have been genomed and every cancer will be diagnosable or by a blood test. And it can just be a regular panel. And it would really, you know, while, because, you know, when we talked about eliminating cervical cancer is different than eradicating cervical cancer. So we may not be able to eradicate cancer, but we could certainly eliminate it with these early detections.
So kudos to the folks who were in their labs working hard while the rest of us were sitting with our tissues and our
hand sanitizer
and our masks.
Wiping down our groceries with Clorox wipes before we knew anything about COVID and how it passed.
It makes you feel like a real loser, doesn't it? What did we do over COVID?
Certainly didn't create a blood test to detect cancer, I can tell you that.
So happy to follow this story and see where it leads.
And your blood test might be just around the corner.
That's right.
In the news.
You know, oftentimes we hear about maternal mortality and maternal mortality rates, particularly in the U.S., such a developed country, really has a high rate of maternal mortality. Which is a little startling. There are lots of reasons for that. But one of the reasons is postpartum hemorrhaging. And this affects up to 10% of all childbirths in the United States.
That's astonishing to me.
Mm-hmm.
I never realized that.
Yeah. And a lot, you know, when you hemorrhage postpartum, it can cause tremendous amounts of blood loss and leading to emergency hysterectomy. Mm. I actually have a friend in town who reached out to me after my cancer diagnosis. She had a very different issue. She gave birth to twins and had a postpartum hemorrhage and had to have an emergency hysterectomy. And, you know, for her, it was less dealing with the emotions of being infertile because they had three children and they knew they were going to end their family, you know, to stop making more babies. So that part didn't affect her, but the physical trauma of having pretty much a near-death experience and having to lose a major organ was a big deal. Well, researchers have developed an interesting way to fix this. Typically, they've used medications, but those don't always work. They've also tried inserting a balloon that puts pressure on the uterus, and that serves as, you know, pressure on a cut. You know, you put pressure on a wound to stop the bleeding, but that also comes with risks. And it may have to stay in your uterus for up to a day.
Ugh.
a whole day with a balloon. And that leads to prolonged periods of not being able to bond with your newborn, not being able to try breastfeeding with your newborn if that's something you're going to try. And so it can really delay a lot of things, not only risking your life because of this hemorrhage. Well, researchers have invented a vacuum. Of all things. And it's a vacuum device that aids natural post-birth contractions, putting pressure on the leaking blood vessels. And this was approved in September of 2020. It's called the JADA vacuum uterine tamponade. And they did a 12-site research study before approving this. But one of the doctors who was the primary investigator from Columbia University says the vacuum approach is very logical since it's like what the body is supposed to do.
Wow.
And so this device can save women's lives. They also go on to say when a patient has a postpartum hemorrhage and you're the doctor at the bedside, it's scary because you know how quickly things can deteriorate. Using this device, when you see the bleeding slowing quickly and you can feel the uterus contracting, it's just incredible.
Wow. And just think how awesome that is for a doctor when he or she sees the problem and they know there's a fix now.
And the other thing, you know how we said that balloon has to stay in for a day? This one can stay in 2 to 3 hours and that's it.
Wow.
So it more quickly reunites the mother and the infant and gets the healing process moving. And so it's really cool that they're using technology to simulate a natural process.
And that's what I was going to say. That don't you wonder, are they all just sitting around the doctor lounge saying, you know, that was a terrible thing when that bleeding started and I didn't know what I was going to do. And somebody else would say, yeah, but you know, the natural process is, and I mean, how do they go through that process?
Well, and then someone with an engineering mind to say putting a vacuum in a uterus would create the same kind of contractions that would, I mean, like just walking through that process, it really, makes you happy that there are people out there who are smarter than you. Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Because if I were in charge of the world, good luck. You just get a bunch of podcasts and random song clips. You're welcome, world.
So much happened while we were secluded. And, you know, we've opened up a lot. Things have changed a lot, but we're not back to any semblance of normalcy, really. I'm
not sure we actually ever will be.
I think you're probably right. I don't think we will be. But I love being able to look back after doing some research and reading up just to see how much good happened during such a bad time. That's just an awesome way to be able to perceive the time of COVID.
Yeah, and that people who were not only inventing and researching and approving, you know, the FDA approving all these things, their processes didn't stop. They, much like us, adapted to the world around them and they figured it out and they, you know, did what they had to do to continue approving these things. Because just imagine if they had just shut down.
Yeah.
Shut down for 18 months, 24 months. And, you know, we wouldn't see any of these devices. All of these things would still be in production or approval processes or testing or something.
Or just in somebody's mind.
Right.
You know, and haven't gone through the creative process yet. It really would have delayed a lot of these great advancements. So, cool.
Cool, dude. Man. Well, thanks for listening to today's episode. It was a little bit different, but you know what? We got to thinking it's been a long time since we did it in the news. So we just decided to do an entire episode of In the News. And we hope you enjoyed it. As always, you can find more on our website, www.downthereaware.com. If you have ideas for the podcast, or if you want us to talk about a certain topic, or if you hear a news story that you think we should know about, feel free to send us a DM on Instagram or Facebook. You can also email us at downthereaware@gmail.com. And you can find us on all your social channels at Down There Aware. Thanks for listening.